2. Man is most correctly defined as a certain intellectual notion eternally made in the divine mind. Irigena. Sunlight ascended and a penetrating mechanical voice declared,
"All right, Appleford. Time to get up and show 'em who you are and what you can do. Big man, that Douglas Appleford. Everybody acknowledges it. I hear them talking. Big man, big talent, big job, much admired by the public at large." It paused. "You awake now?"
Appleford from his bed said,
"Yes."
He sat up, batted the sharp-voiced alarm clock at his bedside into nullification.
"Good morning," he said to the silent apartment. "Slept well? I hope you did, too."
A press of problems tumbled about his disordered mind as he got grouchily from the bed, wandered to the closet for clothing adequately dirty. "Supposed to nail down Ludwig Eng," he said to himself. "The tasks of tomorrow become the worst tasks of today. Reveal to Eng that only one copy of his great-selling book is left in all the world. The time is coming soon for him to act, to do the job only he can do." How would Eng feel? After all, sometimes inventors refused to sit down and do their job. Well, he decided, that actually consisted of an ERAD council problem, theirs, not his. He found a stained, rumpled red shirt. Removing his pajama top, he got into it. The trousers were not so easy. He had to root through the hamper. And then the packet of whiskers. "My ambition," Appleford mused as he padded to the bathroom with the whisker packet, "is to cross the WUS by streetcar." Whee! At the bowl, he washed his face, then lathered on foam glue, opened the packet, and with adroit slappings, managed to convey the whiskers evenly to his chin, jowls, neck. In a moment, he had expertly gotten the whiskers to adhere. "I'm fit now," he decided as he reviewed his countenance in the mirror, "to take the streetcar ride, at least as soon as I process my share of sogum." Switching on the automatic sogum pipe, very modern, he accepted a good masculine bundle, sighed contentedly as he glanced over the sports section of the Los Angeles Times, then at last walked to the kitchen and began to lay out soiled dishes. In no time at all, he faced a bowl of soup, lamb chops, green peas, Martian blue moss with egg sauce, and a cup of hot coffee. These he gathered up, slid the dishes from beneath and around them, of course first checking the windows of the room to be sure no one saw him, and briskly placed the assorted foods in their proper receptacles, which he placed on shelves of the cupboard and in the refrigerator. The time was 8:30. He still had 15 minutes in which to get to work. No need to dwindle himself hurrying. The People's Topical Library Section B would be there when he arrived. It had taken him years to work up to B, and now, as a reward, he had to deal tête-à-tête with a bewildering variety of surly, boorish inventors who balked at their assigned and, according to the ERAD's mandatory, final cleaning of the sole remaining typescript copy of whatever work their name had become associated with, linked by a process which neither he nor the assortment of inventors completely understood. The council presumably understood why a particular given inventor got stuck with a particular assignment and not some other assignment entirely. For instance, Eng and "How I Made My Own Swabble Out of Conventional Household Objects in My Basement During My Spare Time." Appleford reflected as he glanced over the remainder of the pape. Think of the responsibility. After Eng finished, no more swabbles in all the world, unless those untrustworthy rogues in the FNM had a couple illicitly tucked away. In fact, even though the TerCop, the terminal copy of Eng's book, still remained, he already found it difficult to recall what a swabble did and what it looked like. Square? Small? Or round and huge? He put down the pape and rubbed his forehead while he attempted to recall, tried to conjure up an accurate mental image of the device while it was still theoretically possible to do so. Because as soon as Ing reduced the Turcop to a heavily inked silk ribbon, half a ream of bond paper, and a folio of fresh carbon paper, there existed no chance for him or for anyone else to recall either the book or the mechanism, up to now quite useful, which the book described. That task, however, would probably occupy Ing the rest of the year. Cleaning of the Turcop had to progress line by line, word by word. It could not be handled as were the assembled heaps of printed copies. So easy up until the terminal typescript copy, and then, well, to make it worth it to Ing, a really huge salary would be paid him, plus. By his elbow on the small kitchen table, the receiver of the vidphone hopped from its mooring onto the table, and from it came a distant, tiny, shrill voice.
"Goodbye, Doug."
A woman's voice. Lifting the receiver to his ear, he said, "Goodbye."
"I love you, Doug,"
Charisse McFadden stated in her breathless, emotion-saturated voice.
"Do you love me?"
"Yes, I love you too," he said. "When have I seen you last? I hope it won't be long. Tell me it won't be long."
"Most probably tonight," Charisse said. "After work. There's someone I want you to meet, a virtually unknown inventor who's desperately eager to get official eradication for his thesis on, the psychogenic origins of death by meteor strike. I said that because you're in Section B..."
"Tell him to eradicate his thesis himself at his own expense."
"There's no prestige in that."
Her face on the vid screen earnest, Charisse pleaded,
"It's really a dreadful piece of theorizing, Doug. It's as nutty as the day is long. This oaf, this Lance Arbuthnot..."
"That's his name?"
It almost persuaded him, but not quite. In the course of a single day, he received many such requests, and every one, without exception, came represented as a socially dangerous piece by a crank inventor with a goofy name. He had held his chair at Section B too long to be easily snared. But still, he had to investigate this. His ethical structure, his responsibility to society, insisted on it. He sighed.
"I hear you groaning,"
Charisse said brightly. Appleford said,
"As long as he's not from the FNM.
"Well, he is."
She looked and sounded guilty.
"I think they threw him out, though. That's why he's here in Los Angeles and not there."
Rising to his feet, Douglas Appleford said stiffly,
"Hello, Charisse. I must leave now for work. I will not and cannot discuss this trivial matter further."
And that, as far as he was concerned, ended that. He hoped. Arriving home to his conapt at the end of his shift, Officer Joe Tinbane found his wife sitting at the breakfast table. Embarrassed, he averted his gaze until she noticed him and rapidly finished filling her cup with hot, dark coffee.
"Shame," Bethel said reprovingly. "You should have knocked on the kitchen door."
With haughty dignity, she carefully placed the orange juice bottle in the refrigerator, carried the now nearly full box of Happy Oats to its concealment in the cupboard.
"I'll be out of your way in a minute. My vital momentum is now just about complete."
However, she took her time.
"I'm tired," he said, at last seating himself.
Bethel placed empty bowls, a glass, a cup, and a plate before him.
"Guess what the Pape says this morning," she said as she retired discreetly to the living room so that he too could disgorge. "That thug fanatic is coming here, that Raymond Roberts person. On a pilg."
He said, enjoying the hot liquid taste of coffee as he ruminated it up into his weary mouth.
"The Los Angeles chief of police estimates that 4 million people will turn out to see him. He's performing the sacrament of divine unification in Dodger Stadium,
And of course, it'll all be on TV until we're ready to go clear out of our minds. All day long, that's what the Pape says. I'm not making it up.
4 million, Tinbane echoed, thinking professionally how many peace officers it would take to handle crowd control when the crowd consisted of that many. Everybody on the force, including Skyway Patrol and special deputies. What a job. He groaned inwardly.
They use those drugs, Bethel said, for that unification they practice. There's a long article on it here. The drug's a derivative from DMT. It's illegal here, but when he goes to perform the sacrament, they'll let him, them all, use it that one time. Because the California law states...
I know what it states, Tinbane said. It states that a psychedelic drug can be used in a bona fide religious ceremony. God knew he had had this drummed into him by his superiors.
Bethel said, I have half a mind to go there and participate. It's the only time, unless we want to fly to, the FNM. And I frankly don't feel much like doing that.
You do that, he said, happily disgorging cereal, sliced peaches, and milk and sugar in that order.
Want to come? It'll be exciting. Just think, thousands of people unified into one entity. The Udai, he calls it, which is everyone and no one, possessing absolute knowledge because it has no single limiting viewpoint.
She came to the kitchen door, eyes shut.
Well?
No thanks,
Tinbane said, his mouth embarrassingly full.
And don't watch me. You know how I can't stand to have anyone around when I'm having vital momentum. Even if they can't see me, they might hear me chewing.
He could feel her there. He sensed her resentment.
You never take me anywhere, Bethel said presently.
Okay, he agreed. I never take you anywhere. He added, and if I did, it wouldn't be there to hear about religion. We have enough religious nuts in Los Angeles anyhow, he thought. I wonder why Roberts didn't think of making a pilg here a long time ago. I wonder why just now, of all possible times.
Earnestly, Bethel said, Do you think he's a fake? That there is no such thing as Udai?
He shrugged. DMT is a potent drug. Maybe it was so. In any case, it didn't matter, not to him anyhow. Another unexpected rebirth, he said to his wife. At Forest Knowles, naturally. They're never watching those minor cemeteries. They know we'll handle it, with city equipment. Anyhow, Tilly M. Benton was safely at the L.A. receiving hospital thanks to Seb Hermes. Within a week, she would be disgorging like the rest of them.
Eerie, Bethel said, still at the doorway to the kitchen.
How do you know? You never saw it happen.
You and your damn job, Bethel said. Don't take it out on me just because you can't stand it. If it's so awful, quit. Fish or cut bait, as the Romans said.
I can handle the job. Matter of fact, I've already put in for a reassignment.
What's hard, he thought, is you.
Let me disgorge in private, will you? He said angrily. Go off, read the Pape.
Will you be affected, Bethel asked, by Ray Roberts coming here to the coast?
Probably not, he said. He did, after all, have a regular beat. Nothing ever seemed to change that.
They won't have you out with your pop gun protecting him.
Protecting him? He said. I'd shoot him.
Oh, dear, Bethel said mockingly. Such ambition! And then you could go down in history!
I'll go down in history anyhow, Tinbane said.
What for? What have you done? And what in the future do you intend to do? Keep on digging up old ladies out at Forest Knowles Cemetery?
Her tone lacerated him.
Or for being married to me.
That's right, for being married to you.
His tone was equally scathing. He had learned it from her over the long, dead months of their alleged marriage.
Bethel returned then to the living room. Left alone, he continued to disgorge, now left in peace.
He appreciated it.
Anyhow, he thought gloomily, Tilly M. Benton of South Pasadena likes me.